Everyone, and welcome to the NASA's Review Podcast. This is episode 21 for June the 20th, 2013. My name is Colm, and I can't do the show alone. I need the heart and soul of the NASA's Review. So who do I have? Of course, I have Charles Flegel.
Mr. Colm.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
All set up in your new house?
Yes. Set up. I actually have a TV on the wall here to my right where I'm able to watch sports while I work.
Excellent.
Unbelievable.
So as we're talking, the Nats are playing, and they're winning, which is both a good thing.
And hitting.
And hitting.
Yes, and hitting.
Talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
And eating faces.
Oh, God. So much face everywhere.
So much face being eaten. It's funny because I guess there's a lot of popular zombie, obviously, like Walking Dead's really popular now, World War Z and all that.
Yeah.
But we have a friend from college that his name was Fat Leo in college, and he used to talk about eating people's faces all the time, and he was way ahead
of his time, apparently.
He was ahead of the curve. So Fat Leo, although he lives in New Jersey and he has a Yankees tattoo on his shoulder, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
He must be a Nats fan.
That's right.
So, Colm, you got a beer with you?
I do not have a beer. I actually have – that's the one thing I don't have in my new house yet is that I don't have any alcohol. It's crazy. So I'm drinking an Arnold Palmer.
Ah, well, that's nice.
It's caffeine. That's pretty much what fuels me nowadays. I have some Red Bull. That could have been a little harder, but I didn't want to go that way.
I think my favorite thing about an Arnold Palmer is, A, I can't pronounce it, and B – there's that like Sports Center commercial where he's in the cafeteria.
Oh, yeah.
He like puts a little bit of tea, a little bit of lemonade,
so great.
And the guys behind him are like, "Oh man, did you see how he did that?"
So, what about you though? Are you drinking?
Yes, I have my beer for the evening. Just one tonight. I have an Abita Amber.
Ooh, I'm a big fan of that.
It's a very good beer. I can't remember. I must have had it before. I've been to New Orleans. I'm sure I've had an Abita Amber before, but I usually get.
Is that where it's out of? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're New Orleans beer.
I did not know that. Wow, look at that.
And it is good. I don't tend to drink like amber lagers that much.
Me either. Yeah.
I usually get like stuff that's really hoppy or whatever, but I like it. It's good.
But it's amazing that we're talking about beer because I have to say, you wrote an article that, I mean, it's pretty much taken on the Nationals fan base on storm, but just personally myself, obviously this is a labor of love that you created. And you took the Nationals Park map and you basically broke down where if anyone is going to that park, you can get the beer you want to try and you know where to go. So
yes.
Why don't you talk about that?
All right. Well, first of all, if you go to thenationalsreview.com, there's a couple places you can find it. It's one of the regular posts, but then I also put it up. There's like a blue toolbar that runs across the top. And if you click on the right side, there's one that's called the Nationals Park Beer Guide.
Mm-hmm.
When I update this, I'll update that page because that's like a page
to
a post. I'm going to try and update it again this year. I'm not going to probably do it. I think it's probably a little much to try and do it more than, you know, two or three times a year at the most. But
right.
I definitely want to go back in, you know, August or September and do an update.
I think it's a must because the way you did it of – I have to say, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about how the process with it, but
– all right. So, yeah, go ahead.
I love that you have the nice, like, you have, like, a bird's eye view. Then you've got, like – basically, if I'm sitting at home plate looking at the red loft and the red porch, I mean, you've got different – all the different levels. You really made it for the beer connoisseur to just get whatever they want.
Thank you. Well, actually, this is a good opportunity to sort of – I got a couple questions. So first of all, it was awesome for me because this was like – you know, for the site, this was by far the biggest day, or it was actually 2 days the site has ever had.
Wow.
And it was something like 5,000 or 6,000 hits, which is just, I mean, I'm sure the DC sports blog gets that every day.
Right.
We don't. Right. And so, you know, even today, I got 125 hits for the beer guide. So I don't know, somebody, and they're all, 100 of them are from Twitter. So somebody put it out somewhere. It was mentioned on Twitter that somebody said, hey, check this out. So just really, really cool for me that the site's getting hits because of that, and that people got such a good response to it. A lot of positive response, which is, you know, it's part of the reason that we're doing this, right, is because we enjoy baseball, and we love talking about it, and we love getting sort of positive feedback.
Yes, totally.
Uh-huh. So I'll tell you how I did it, and then maybe clear up a few things that some of the common questions that people had. So basically what I did was I do what I do every time I go to the game, which is I walk in the center field gate, mm-hmm. I walk into the red porch, mm-hmm. I walk around the people that are trying to get your name for a seat, and I just go, I'm going to the bar, yep. Walk around to the bar and get a beer. But this time when I got a beer, I actually shadily like pulled out a map and started writing down all the beers.
Amazing.
Bartender just kind of looked at me and they didn't say anything. I don't know if they knew what I was doing, but it was very early when I got there. So
okay. So this was all created on a one-game trip?
Yes, I went.
Wow.
Gosh, it was like June 5th or something like that. I went to the game, mm-hmm. and I think it was the 5th because – oh, no, I think I went the 4th because I published it on the 5th. So right. Monday the 4th I went. And went to the Red Porch, wrote down all the beers on tap there. I didn't even bother to look what else is in the Red Porch because there's so many awesome beers on tap. Why would you get
them? Yeah, why would you? Yeah. Come on. We're adults here.
Right. This isn't beer pong.
Yeah, talking. Come on.
So one question people had was like the picture I used of the Red Porch, which, mm-hmm. by the way, I got that picture from JD Land, which is an awesome website. It's like this person that lives in the area, and you got to go to the site once in a while and check out their pictures.
Oh, wow. I'm here right now. This is amazing.
She took pictures of like Southeast 5 years ago and today, or maybe whatever, before construction and post-construction.
Right.
And so it's so cool to look around it. But I saw just a great picture of the Red Porch. I just, you know, sent her a Twitter message like, hey, can I use that picture? Sure, no problem. So thanks to JD Land for that picture. People ask me, is that what's in the Red Loft as well? No, that's just the Red Porch on that picture.
Right, that's, yeah.
The Red Loft is a much smaller selection, actually. So just so everybody knows, that's just the Red Loft. And so if you look at the map, the main concourse level, mm-hmm. I started there, and then I just walked around towards, like, the left field foul pole, looked at everything, went all the way around the main concourse, and was like, that was exhausting, but I was like, you know what? I did the majority of it already, so I might as well do the rest. Went up to the – I went up to the gallery level because I knew there wasn't going to be much up there, finished that, and then went down to the club level. And I got to the game early enough that it wasn't until I got to the club level that people were really starting to sort of – be around me and being
right,
like,
why's
this guy carrying beer and taking notes?
Did you get any conversations with any of the bartenders during this journey?
No, not at all. I actually tried to avoid them at all costs.
Okay.
It was like, I just want to get it done so I could like sit down and enjoy the game.
Right, right.
And I got it done in plenty of time to watch the whole game, which that was the game, by the way, that they won with bases loaded. Lombardozzi hit a sack fly to left field.
I remember it.
So in terms of what I put in and what I didn't put in, mm-hmm. every food stand has like your Miller Lights and your MGDs and your Coors Lights.
Right.
Coors Lights. I didn't put those in. I went to places that had something else, you know, sort of craft brew, although like I also looked at the Miller Lite scoreboard walk just because like it's got so many beers so that I wanted to include it. They have some Line and Kugel stuff, I guess, that's kind of craft, but for the most part, they don't have craft. But, like, even the baseline brews, some of them are zero craft. Some of them are just, like, Miller Lite, MGD, Coors Light, and then maybe a Blue Moon, which is sort of craft, but it's made by Coors. So
right. It used to be craft, right?
Yeah, I think they bought them
out. So did you find out at all how often this changes?
No, I didn't. And
interesting.
That's the other thing. So everybody asks, well, you know, some people will be like, well, I went and saw this differently. You know, I get it's not going to be 100% the same. I'm sure the red porch isn't going to be the same in a month or two. But I wanted to get it. It's sort of a snapshot in time, right? This is right. What it was like on that date. But at the same time, it's not going to be, like, insanely different down the road. Like, so true. If you look at a baseline bruise that has Sierra Nevada Pale Ale and you are looking for that beer, you might be disappointed if you go there and it's not there. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that one that has the Pale Ale has, like, three or four other really good beers in can, like craft beers in cans. So, like, you're going to find something unique, right. Something besides your typical stuff. So, and the other thing that I did that was kind of subtle, but I was actually really proud of it, was I did the different colors for whether it's on bottles. Because I didn't.
Huge.
I wasn't even going to represent that. And then I was like, you know what? It'd be really cool. Like, I'd want to know that.
Yep.
So I was trying to think of the best way to do it. I just realized, well, I could just do it with the colors. So.
So I have two questions for you then.
All right.
Do you know, did you do a count of how many different kind there brands there are?
No, that's a good
interesting
good question.
I'd love to know that. And two, of all the, since you did a full research, where would you say you, now you said that you come in center field, you go straight to Red Porch. But now after seeing everything, is that still your go-to?
Well, the Red Porch is a little different than the rest of places, right? Because they have like 12 beers, whatever it is, on tap, and right. They're all like craft. So, like, that's cool. But, you know, when I'm sitting, I'd rather be inside the foul pole. I'd rather sit in foul territory than fair territory, even like really close seats. So even if I'm on this, I'd almost rather sit on the 300 level in behind home plate than the 100 level in left field. That's just the way I like to watch a game. So I tend to be far away from the Red Porch most of the time I go to a game anyway. So I usually only go there once a game. So I think there are a couple good places. There's the Baseline Microbrews right by the big ramp on the first floor is really good, although that's pretty close to the Red Porch, but you won't get – it tends to not be crowded. It's sort of like a – it's around the corner from like where that Hard Times is and stuff like that.
Oh, right. I know what you're talking
about. That one tends to actually not have a huge line, so that's a good one. And then there's actually a Baseline Brews on the exact opposite side of the field, sort of behind the right field foul pole that has a lot of good stuff. Those are probably the two best ones on the main concourse other than the Red Porch. On the club level, there's a Baseline Microbrew before you hit the entrance to like the club, the Stars and Stripes Club, where you have to like have a card or whatever to get in there.
Oh, right.
That has a lot of stuff. And actually, I was surprised, pleasantly surprised, that the Red Loft had a Flying Dog IPA on tap. But they only had four different beers on tap, and I'm sure they do change them out. So, and they had like Liney's, Summer Shandy, Blue Moon, and Miller Lite, and those three are pretty standard across the board.
Right, yeah.
So the fourth one, it seems like they've decided that the fourth one will be a craft beer. It's just, you know, you hit or miss as to whether or not you're going to get one. And then the other thing that I was pleasantly surprised about is that up on the gallery level, the 300 and 400s, right behind home plate, there's like a Baseline Microbrew with they had Dogfish Head 60 Minute on tap. So
that's another place besides Red Porch.
Right, and that was pretty cool because that's the only place that I've seen that on tap. And again, I don't know if every single game it's going to be on tap, but.
I have to say, when I saw this, I was blown away, and I can see this evolving more and more, and who knows, you might get in touch with the distributor there to get insider information, and who knows, maybe we can convince Essie to make an interactive map as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is my abilities.
It's unbelievable.
With really, I mean, honestly, people ask me, what did you use for this? I actually used PowerPoint. I mean.
Really?
Yeah, I snapped, you know, pulled these photos off the maps off the Nats website, mm-hmm. saved them as picture files, and put them as the full size thing on the PowerPoint. And then all the boxes are like PowerPoint stuff. So it's my amazing. Consulting skills come into play. But obviously, it's a great graphic and it's good for printing out, which actually a couple of people wrote me and they were like, I'm actually printing out the main concourse one and bringing it to the game with me and checking off amazing. A couple, which was really cool. But what would be awesome is if our buddy SA, who's a big graphic designer, could like, I would love to like mouse over it and be able to see which beers there are or whatever, stuff like that. But
we'll have to bribe him or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's unbelievable. I highly recommend everyone to check it out. And I'm assuming if people want to contact you, if they go and they notice a change, to contact you and you'll make a change.
Yeah, I mean, so somebody actually already wrote me and said I went to this Baseline Brew and they had those different things. And what I did was I left the comment up so people can see it. But I'm not going to change this on sort of a daily basis just because I think there will be changes. But what I will do, like I said, is I'll go back, you know, August maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm shooting for, you know, in another month or two, maybe even July, and just do the rounds again and see what's changed and what hasn't and make those changes and update it. So
you have to let me know when you're going to do that, because I would love to just go along with this process to see how it was done, because it's fascinating how incredible the amount of information you got.
I kept my notes.
It's unbelievable.
Like chicken scratch on a map, but it's fun. It's a fun time.
Yeah. So that's great. So, yeah, everyone check it out and tweet it out if you haven't already, because who doesn't want to have a map of where to get beer at a ballpark? Who doesn't?
You know who doesn't? It's the people that are happy with Miller Lite. Oh. And to them I say, you know what? Good for you, because you spend less money on beer than me. But if you're not happy with it, then there's, you know, ways to find out where the good beers are.
All right. So let's talk about what's going on with the Nationals.
Well, what's going on is people are starting to realize that this team has been pitching really well recently.
Yes.
And they can't score to save their lives.
Yes.
And so they can't win games, because if you don't score any runs, you don't win, no matter how good your pitching is.
That's very true.
But I will say that there's some signs of life.
I think as recently, yes, I would say that, yes.
It might be a little less recent than you think. I actually think the turning point for the offense, so people will talk about like Desmond's grand slam in the 11th inning.
Amazing.
Which was awesome to see. As we're speaking, the Nats are up 5-1 on the Rockies. It's Thursday night.
Wait, was the grand slam last night or two nights?
Grand slam was last night for us.
Oh, gosh. I can't even. It's like crazy. I mean, with these hockey playoffs and basketball playoffs, it's just like.
Just so much going on.
Yeah.
But I actually. So I thought the turning point was actually. So you take, I don't know, the first week in June, last week in May, mm-hmm. they basically had Span not hitting, Harper out, mm-hmm. and then you had Zimmerman hitting, LaRoche was hitting at the end of May, mm-hmm. and Desmond was hitting pretty well. Those three guys, and that was it. Worth was still out.
Yeah.
Espinoza was playing second and not hitting at all. Mm-hmm. Suzuki wasn't hitting.
The platoon outfield wasn't hitting.
Right. The left fielder, whoever was playing outfield, was right. So you really just had three guys hitting. And even though they were hitting well, Zimmerman's numbers have been really good since he's come back from the DL. He's actually he's second in the National League in OPS for third baseman.
Wow. Who's number one?
David Wright.
Oh, but, there you go. So.
But that includes – that's not like – since he came back, that's this season. He's got the second best OPS in the NL among third base. So that includes his bad April. So he's been hitting. You've seen Desmond's numbers are good even before the grand slam.
He's an RBI machine now.
Yeah, and LaRoche had a great May, but it wasn't enough to get them to score runs. The problem was their lineup wasn't deep, right? So those guys would get hits, but when you only have three guys hitting, unless they hit in the same inning, you start going, oh, well, you know, they're not hitting with runners in scoring position, blah, blah, blah. And then you look back and you're like, well, you know, Zimmerman's batting .330 over the last month and Desmond's batting .315. Why aren't they scoring? It's because Desmond gets two hits and Zimmerman gets two hits, but they're not in the same inning.
Yeah.
And so I think the turning point was actually when Rendon and Worth came back. Rendon up from the minors and Worth from the DL. Because what happened is you extended the lineup by two guys. You have five guys that are hitting now, right? And LaRoche slumped a little bit, but for the most part, I mean, you have Span, who looks like he's starting to come back, but he's still been off for a little bit. So then two through six, you have Rendon and Zimmerman and Worth and Desmond and LaRoche, and they're all hitting. And so you start scoring more runs because you don't need like a roll of the dice to have your two or three good hitters hitting at the same time. And I think that was the turning point. And actually, if you go back, I did a quick, like, this is not exactly difficult arithmetic, but I did a quick scan, and the last 12 games are basically – so Worth came up on the 4th of June, and Rendon came up on the 5th.
Oh,
and
really?
Then that was like – the 5th, I think, was a Wednesday. And then if you remember, they got rained out for a couple days, and like everybody on Twitter was like, this probably is the best thing for the Nats to have a few days extra off. So they didn't play again until I think it was a Saturday, and it was the 8th. So they're next. So they played the 5th. They didn't play the 6th or the 7th, and then they played the 8th. Since the 8th, they've played 12 games, including Thursday night's game, which we just watched finish.
Right.
They scored 53 runs in those 12 games, which is 4.46 runs per game. Now this is we're talking about an extremely small sample size. This is about 2 weeks of baseball. However, in those 2 weeks, that 4.46. If you just said that was the whole season, that's the fourth best in the NL for runs per game. It's only St. Louis, Colorado, and Cincinnati have scored more than 4.4.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did not say the magic word Atlanta as one of those teams. That's good.
Atlanta, no, that's better than Atlanta. So, you know, obviously this is an extremely small sample size, but they have been hitting, and I don't think the turning point was anything that people think. I think they were hitting well, and then they ran into... You know, they didn't do great against Lannon, but they still scored 4 runs that game. Mm-hmm. And then they ran into Lee, and Lee shut him down. But he's Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee's amazing.
Yeah, he's really good lately. He's turned it around.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even when you count that game against Lee where they scored 0 runs, they're averaging almost 4.5 runs a game in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So, again, it's 2 or 3 weeks. It's nothing to get excited about per se, but maybe it's a sign of life is the way I see it.
Wow.
And so maybe if they do end up playing decently and scoring some runs and actually, you know, make it the playoffs, let's say.
You're right.
You could turn around and look at the turning point in the season and people will say, oh, it was that grand slam. But maybe it was when Worth and Rendon came back. Because to me, within 2 days of each other and then they start scoring runs, it really made the lineup look entirely different.
I tend to agree with that statement totally. And speaking of that, why don't we talk about Mr. Anthony Rendon?
He's awesome.
And what in? I mean, first of all, we've talked about him before. We even were talking about him at third. Did we ever say like second base? Maybe
I think you and I
with it.
Yeah, you know, there was talk about it. I think you and I were both of the mindset that a lot of people said, which is the guy's had some real injury problems. With his ankles. You know, the first time he still hasn't taken a real hard takeout slide at second base, and that's going to scare me because he's got really fragile ankles.
Right.
But you know what? In terms of playing second base, you know, I don't know if he's the rangiest guy out there, but he plays the position very well.
I'm shocked how well, actually.
Me too. He's an incredible fielder.
There was a play, I don't know, was it 3 games ago, or he did this amazing dive that I didn't think he could get to it, and they pulled a double play off it, and it blew my mind. But
you know
besides,
he reminds me a little bit in the field, and I don't think he's as good, and I don't think he's got the range, and I don't want you to think that I'm saying he compares to him in the field.
Wait, can I guess?
Yeah,
I think Roberto Alomar.
Oh wow, I wasn't thinking of him. Oh. I'm trying to remember what he looked like when he was playing. There's a guy that plays now that maybe I think Rendon just looks very smooth in the field, like he's on ice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Cano looks like to me. Cano looks so smooth. Now, I don't think Rendon is, you know, not that Cano is like the greatest second baseman out there in terms of fielding, but Cano's a very good – I don't know that Rendon is that good.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about the way he plays that reminds me of him, that it almost looks – maybe smooth isn't the right word. It almost looks effortless. And when Cano was young and when he booted balls, people would be like, well, he's not trying. Mm-hmm. And now that he doesn't have as many errors, people realize that he's always trying. That's just kind of the way he looks when he plays.
Right.
Almost for me, it's a lack of effort.
I thought you were going to say Roberto Alomar because for some reason when I see him out there, I just think Roberto Alomar. I don't know what it is. It's
interesting. I'll have to pull up some clips of Robbie non-spitting in umpire's face clips and seeing how he looks.
But let's talk about his bat.
Oh, he
did
can
you
hit.
Think that I I heard he was a good hitter, but I didn't realize how good of a hitter he is.
He just looks so comfortable up there. He's batting 325 after going 2-for-4 tonight.
Wow. I'm like amazed. And it's not really it's not really power. I guess, well, he does hit a lot of doubles, actually.
Yeah, and you know, he's only 23, and I think they say that with a lot of young hitters, the power comes. Mm-hmm. I don't know that, you know, when you read guys like Keith Law and these other scouts, even though they said he's a top five guy when he was in the draft, I don't think they ever said they thought he was going to be a major power home run scorer. I think he doesn't uppercut the ball that much, so he hits line drives.
Now, right.
They're still going to get out of the park sometimes, but you know, I think they see him sort of topping out at 20 home runs a year, which for a corner infielder isn't a ton. Mm-hmm. But if you're batting 315, who cares, you know?
Right. How do you feel about his position in the lineup?
You know, I'm very curious where they're going to put him when Harper comes back.
Right.
Because we've talked about this before. I really did not like – there was that article that said, you know, your best hitter should be – batting number two.
Right.
And I was kind of like, well, I get it, and I kind of agree with the math, but I don't mind if I'd rather do lefty-righty than worry about putting your absolute best guy at number two. Mm-hmm. But what we talked about this, what we didn't like is Davey would put some of his worst hitters at number two because they were like bat control guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, he makes a lot of contact, so I want him at number two. And I'm like, no, I'd rather have a guy that's going to take a walk. If he's a better hitter, I don't need Lombardozzi at number two. And so if Rendon's batting second, fine, you know.
Right.
I'd be curious what happens when Harper comes back, though.
Right. So, yeah, okay. So that's about the same thing I was thinking of. But, I mean, I think his best attribute has to be his hair, though, right?
Do you think – so – did LaRoche do that? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that's the story I heard as well.
But I think he kind of likes it.
Oh, of course. He's given him his own identity. And I'm amazed. And we're going to go into this now. We can basically go into the person he's taken over for. And that's, of course, Danny Espinosa, I believe he's in the minor leagues right now.
He's in Triple A. Yeah, I think the last three games, literally has 10 strikeouts, like 12 at-bats. Yeah, he is just completely lost. And I almost want him to be so bad that they just go sit down and have shoulder surgery because I think I'm still convinced. He wasn't this bad in the majors.
No, never.
And he certainly isn't this bad to be doing this in AAA. And so something's going on. It's either mental or it's his shoulder. But something's wrong with him.
So, okay. So let's say... Okay, let's say this. Do you want him to stick around, or do you want him to be part of a trade during the All-Star break?
I guess it depends what they get for him. I mean, I'm not convinced that they're ready to give up on him.
Right.
Especially, like, they want to think long-term, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know if they still see Zimmerman moving to first. I mean, I'm not sure that discussion's happened recently because he hasn't thrown the ball away that much.
Right.
And they know he's more valuable at third. But let's say in a year and a half, they may be really thinking about that, right? And that's not that far away if you're a general manager. And so maybe they see if Espinosa can get back to being Espinosa.
Right.
The infield of Rendon at third and Zimmerman at first and Espinosa.
Wow. That's incredible infield.
Yeah, if Espinosa can get back to what he was doing in the middle of last year, it is. But who knows? Who knows? I mean, I'm just shocked that it's the end of June and he still can't hit the ball to save his life.
Yeah, I thought it was just like he was just having a slow start and that he was just going to put it together. Because we saw last year, I mean, he went on some streaks there that was like he was the best second baseman in the league.
He carried the team for a little while last year. I mean, in the middle of the season when nobody was hitting, and he was. I don't know what's up with him. I mean, I love the guy as a player. He's fun to watch, but it was painful this year to watch him. But, you know, I know nothing about the health of players, and I know nothing about injuries and things like that. But it just seems to me like there might be something physically wrong with him. And that shoulder, look, this is similar to what happened to LaRoche. 2 years ago when he came out and he said, well, the shoulder doesn't really bother me. I can play.
Yeah.
And he stunk for like a month and a half, and then they put him into surgery. But
right. It's almost like, too, that I think he was trying so hard to just make it seem like he didn't have anything wrong with him just because he knew that if he sits out and they let this kid Rendon come in, it could be over.
Yeah.
I mean,
it might be. I mean, who's going to want him to come play now that Rendon is doing?
Yeah, I don't even know how you can even make a case for it. Unless
the thing about Rendon is everybody who knew scouting, and this is not me because I don't know scouting, but everybody that I read that knew scouting was like, when Rendon got drafted in 2011, they said he's ready to play Major League Baseball now.
Wow.
That's just, I mean, he was such, there's a guy like this every year. And some of them don't have the ceiling that Rendon has. Some of them aren't going to be projected to be as good as he will be. But there's a guy that comes out of college that they're just like, look, he's already done 4 years in college. He's such a good hitter and a professional style hitter in college that, yeah, you may put him in the minors for a couple months just to get him comfortable with the wooden bats, blah, 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 whatever. But he really has the plate presence and the understanding to play in Major League Baseball now. And he was the guy in that year's draft where everybody said he's the closest to being a major league hitter today.
Wow.
And so I don't think people are surprised about the way he's hitting. I think some of the surprise is that he's playing second base as well as he is. And it's not just the fielding part. It's the flips to short.
Yes, yes.
It's exactly. The gloving the bunt and flipping it underhanded wall, you know, flipping it without transferring to his pitching or to his throwing hand yesterday.
He's definitely like 50% better than I thought he was.
Yeah, I mean, I think Espinoza is so underrated in terms of his fielding.
Mm-hmm.
Like Espinoza could play shortstop.
Yeah.
Could play shortstop well. He would be a rangy shortstop. He would be one of the, probably one of the 15 best, maybe 20 best fielding shortstops in Major League Baseball if he was a starting shortstop.
Yeah.
And so I don't think Rendon can ever be that good as a fielder. And so the question is, will he ever be sort of bad enough that you go, oh, maybe we need to move him? Because right now he's not.
Yeah.
Right now the way he's playing, you're like, we never need to move him. He's good. He's really good enough. He gets the balls and makes the plays.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of second base, though, I mean, there's another second baseman that's not playing second base as well. And
yeah, there's actually three second basemen on the team right now. And I wrote about this, I guess, on Tuesday. But I basically said that the Nats' fourth outfielder is two guys, and they're second basemen. because over the last couple weeks, really week or two, left field, center field, it's been manned more by Lombardozzi and Cabernas than even Bernardina, which has made Bernardina really the sixth outfielder and Lombardozzi and Cabernas the fourth and fifth. But I kind of lumped them together as one entity.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because they're both second basemen. I wrote this. They've played a total of like, I don't know, 28 games in Major League. Cabernas played 28 games at second base in minor league baseball. Or in the outfield, sorry. Let me start over.
Of all his whole career in the minor leagues?
His entire career in the minor leagues are 311 games.
Wow.
And he played 28 of them in the outfield. And they were all this year.
Right, I'm sure.
He's a second baseman until this year.
Mm-hmm.
Lombardozzi has played 150 games or so in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
He played a third of those, about 50. In the outfield.
Wow.
That's it. And he never played any in the minors. So these guys are really second basemen that are being used in the outfield. Now, my point isn't that these guys are bad players. I actually think that both of them serve a value on the team, right? They're super utility men. They're like...
they are. They're like, what's his name, who used to be like that?
There's that... I always think of the guy that was on the Mets, like Super Joe. I can't remember his last name, but he played every position.
Oh, the one guy now, David Murphy. Is it David Murphy?
David Murphy's mostly an outfielder. But there's guys like, well, look, Jerry Hairston played everywhere.
Yes, there you go.
Like Hairston can do that. They're just guys that, like, especially in the NL.
They're athletes.
Yeah, and look, Lombardozzi can play competently, play third, second, first, and left field, and maybe even right, although he probably doesn't have the arm for it.
Daniel Murphy, that's the guy on the Mets.
Daniel Murphy plays second base in the outfield.
Right.
And Cabernas has been playing some center because he's athletic enough. And so it's great that these guys can do that. But to have both of them, to me, seems a little redundant. And if they were hitting, I wouldn't have an issue, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you're hitting, you're going to find at-bats for guys. But neither of them are hitting. And Cabernas hasn't had much of a shot, and he did so good in AAA that I'd almost say he should get a shot, and Lombardozzi should get the regular at-bats in AAA right now.
Interesting.
That's my take. And I think, you know, there's two guys they could bring up that are actual outfielders to be their fourth outfielder.
It's funny, though. Cabernas, he seems like a big guy to me. Every time I see him, I'm like, that guy, he looks more like an outfielder than Lombardozzi does.
Yeah, I think he's taller, but he's kind of thin.
Yeah, he's very thin, yeah.
And covered in tats.
He is covered in tats.
I think they should bring up either Corey Brown or Yuri Perez.
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on with Corey Brown.
He's 27. He's got 10 home runs this year, I think, in AAA, and he had 25 last year. So he's got power, right? He's not going to hit. Look, if you need to use him for the whole season, you're probably going to be disappointed because he's going to be like a 240 hitter. But as a bench guy, fourth outfielder, as a three-week fill-in kind of guy, he's from what I understand, he'd be a Gold Glove caliber center fielder or close.
Oh, wow. Then, yeah, so that makes no sense. Get him up here.
And maybe I'm off on that Gold Glove part, but I know he's a very good defensive player and center field. So you get him in left, and like that, the thing that got me started on it was there was a play on, I believe it was Tuesday night when...
Oh, God, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It was a tie game or... No.
No, we were...
Down by one.
Down by one, yeah.
2-1 with men on and two outs. And there was a ball hit directly at Lombardozzi. And he took a step back and then came in. And the ball bounced about a foot in front of him. And, look, I don't know if Harper would have caught that ball or Bernardino or Corey Brown or anybody else. But what I do know is that Lombardozzi didn't. And he's not a natural outfielder. And he's only played 50 games there in his life. And so I'd rather have... The sort of like my takeaway from it was that if nobody's going to hit, you might as well get people who can field out there.
Yes, I agree with that.
And since Lombardozzi and Cabernas haven't hit yet, maybe you should give Brown or Perez a chance. Now, Brown, I think, deserves a shot just because, look, he's 27. He's not going to get any better. Bring him up. See if he can do what like Tyler Moore did last year, which was play in limited time, hit like 290, which Tyler Moore is not a 290 hitter, and in that 290 batting average, managed to hit 10 or 12 home runs.
Right.
And only give him like 250 plate appearances. Mm-hmm. That's what Corey Brown could be useful for. He's a major league player. He's not a starting major league outfielder. He's a fourth or fifth outfielder.
Right.
But he's a major league player.
No, I'm 100%. I love Corey Brown, and I just don't get why he's not there right now, but...
And then if you look at Perez, he's basically got this. Like last year in AAA, his numbers were almost exactly what Cabernas did this year in AAA.
Interesting.
Except he's like 2 years younger, and he's an outfielder. And so you'd think there was a better chance of success.
So, but at least, I mean, the best part is that we talked about is that we're starting to hit again.
Yes.
And... we need to start winning games going. I want us to be in a really nice position going in to All-Star break soon. So we got, I think it's like, what, 3 or 4 weeks away?
Yeah, and there's a lot of home games coming up, which is good.
Right.
They're playing like 15 out of 20 games at home or something like that. And they need to do much better than winning, you know, just a winning record in those home games.
Right. So let's go to the other side of the ball in a way.
The pitching.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how... Well, I'm just going to say it's back. You're going to say it's back. Why is it back?
Well, first of all, I'm just looking at the numbers right now, and this doesn't factor in the Thursday night game in which Zimmerman only gave up one run in eight innings.
He's so awesome.
But the Nets do have the fifth best ERA in the NL, so they're certainly pitching well enough to win games, and if they could hit at all, which they've started to do.
Right.
They could win games. They have a 3.59 ERA, and that beats everybody other than Atlanta's still up top, and then St. Louis and Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. And you wonder why the NL Central looks so tough. St. Louis and Cincinnati are, like, top three in runs scored, and they're, like, top four in runs or in ERA. So those guys look tough. But we don't need to worry about them yet because the Nats are just at 500 right now.
Right, exactly.
So until they get a little bit over that, I'm not really worried about the NL Central potential playoff opponents. But, yeah, so obviously you're talking about Strasburg's back.
Finally.
Detweiler's back.
Yes. And the best part about it is that Strasburg, what was that? Was it 2 days ago he pitched? Or was it yesterday? No, two days.
To the podcast listeners, everything was.
Yeah, that's right. It was a couple days ago, but I thought he pitched great.
He did,
but we did not win that game. I don't think. Isn't that the game where Chad Tracy? All the games are meshing together.
They're all one big blur.
He didn't win that game, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, but I thought he looked great.
So the Nats lost, but they lost 2-0.
Right.
He pitched only 5 innings, but it was his first game back. He only threw 82 pitches, so it's not like he was. Totally, you know, I'm sure they could have let him pitch another inning, but I think they were kind of like, I think Davey's definitely one of those guys that's like, look, you pitched 5, you gave up 1 run.
Right.
Let's get you out of here feeling good about your start. He's definitely like a psychological type guy, right? He wants, he wants guys to leave feeling good, even if it's an inning early. But yeah, he did well. He walked a few guys. I think he walked 4 guys in 5 innings. So that was
that's
a little.
Right. He did do that.
Yeah, he was effectively wild, but he pitched a good game. Detweiler had not quite as good of a game back. Detweiler gave up, I think, 3 runs.
Let's see. He gave up 4.
Oh, he gave up 4 runs in 6 innings, and they lost that game. But you know what? I thought he looked pretty good, and he, you know, for him to come back after being out a few games, he's basically gave up 3 runs and 4 runs, 2 games, but he looks like he's pitching well, right? Sometimes you see guys and you're like, he's laboring.
He had no walks in both his starts, so that's huge.
You know, I think he'll be fine. I think this is just kind of who he is, that there are going to be some games where he gives up 4 runs, and there are going to be some games where he gives up 1 run, but he's never going to strike out a ton of guys. Mm-hmm. And as long as he doesn't walk a ton of guys, they hit the ball on the ground. He doesn't tend to give up too many home runs, and it's good enough that if the Nats can score, they'll win some games.
Right. Can we talk about my favorite new man in the bullpen? And I bet you know who he is.
Who's that?
Mr. Ian Kroll.
He's been awesome, huh?
He is. I had no idea who this guy was, and then he comes. He's only given up. So far in his debut, he has 8 Ks in I don't know how many innings. But he's only given up 1 walk, and it seems like he just comes in and shuts down the team. He does his 1 inning, and he's done.
How about in the extra inning game against Colorado where they brought him in with, I think...
Oh, yeah, he got the hold there. That's right.
Well, they brought him in. It was really the first time he pitched in any sort of pressure situation. Mm-hmm. And he, like, walked the first guy on 4 pitches, and Davey came out, settled him down, and then he just...
That's right.
Mowed down the next guy.
Yeah, I had no idea. This guy, I mean, I was checking him out the other day. He was drafted by, shocker, Billy Beane. And
he's
a seventh rounder, too.
Was he the throw-in with Michael Morse? Is that what it was?
It was 2009 was when he was drafted.
So January 16th, 2013... Sorry, March 20th, 2013, the A's sent Ian Kroll to the Nationals to complete an earlier deal made on January 16th. So he was the player to be named later in the A.J. Cole and Blake Treinen trade.
So that was an incredible trade then for us because we got A.J. Cole back. Well,
the thing about it is, look, if Kroll can do this, and nobody thinks he's going to be perfect throughout.
Right.
But... he is a lefty, and the Nats
haven't
really had a lefty, and I think they missed it sometimes.
Yeah,
but you know, his minor league career was pretty good in the lower levels, and then in 2012, he just got tattooed in both high A and in double A. He just looked awful, And then he came to, and this was just last year, like 2011, he was good. 2012, 5.2 ERA, stretched over high A, mostly in high A, not even double A. And then he came here, and he was just unhittable in Harrisburg in double A.
Right.
26 innings pitched, 7 walks and 29 strikeouts, 0.69 ERA. And so they brought him up, and he's been awesome.
He has been awesome. I'm really excited about him. I hope he continues this up. Because I thought the guy, Eric Davis, was going to be the guy that was going to be blowing me away. And in my opinion, he has not impressed me at all.
Well, he looks too much like Tyler Clippard. I think it's just it's going to cause confusion when he's walking around and stuff.
He does.
But, I mean, they're using Kroll right, I think.
Exactly.
What helps, right? He's got, like, way more than half of his appearance or his, you know, the batters faced.
Right. He's a specialty against, type guy,
right,
you know?
They're against lefties now.
Exactly.
No righties have gotten a hit off him, but he's faced, I think, 22. I'm looking at his numbers now. 22 batters. 13 of them have been lefties. So, you know, that's like 60%, something like that. So, definitely used properly. And I wouldn't want him pitching against righties yet that much in high pressure situations, but a lefty specialist, great.
Yeah, great. No, I agree.
I like him a lot. There is one other pitcher I'd like to talk
about. Yes, I want you to go to him because, I mean, this was our man last year.
The man is Mr. Gio Gonzalez.
Yes.
And the last time Gio actually has a win on his resume is May 5th.
Wow.
But, so that was...
Well, yeah.
That was a few starts ago. That was 9 starts ago.
Good God.
But this is for everybody that still believes W's for pitchers are important. This is what he's done in that time. He started 9 games.
Wow.
Thrown 59 and two-thirds innings. He's struck out 57 in those 59 and two-thirds innings.
That's the most impressive. Yeah, right there.
Only walked 23, which is not a tiny amount, but for Gio, who has always had a history of walking people, that's a great number, like almost a 3-to-1, a little lower than like a 2.5-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. And his ERA is 2.26.
Wow.
2.26. He brought his ERA down. It was at 4.97.
Right.
It was actually on April 30th, his ERA was 5.34. It's now 3.34. He's brought it down 2 full runs since April 30th. He is Gio Gonzalez again. And I don't know what the hell happened at the beginning of the year. And I put some posts actually up about, if you look at the website, about his velocity and the changes in that. And it's a little bit lower, his average fastball velocity, a little bit lower than last year's. And obviously last year was his best year of his career.
Right, right.
And I don't want to get into that now. I just, you know, there's possible reasons why he wasn't as effective earlier in the year. But whatever it is, he's only had, in that 9-game stretch since the beginning of May, he's only had one game where he's given up more than 2 earned runs. And in that game, it was only 4.
Hmm.
So he's also struck out. I mean, he's basically struck out a guy an inning. And on the 19th against Philly, when they actually won the game, when Desmond hit the grand slam, he didn't get the win. But look, he went 7 innings pitch. He started out early, gave up a home run, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like it was going to be a shaky start. Then he was just unhittable. He struck out 11 guys in 7 innings. He only walked 2. He was great through 7 innings. So I'm really excited because I think Gio's back. You know, Strasburg's only pitched 1 game, but he looked good, not great. But good, not great for Strasburg is great for everybody else.
Right. Well, I mean, if you have him coming back, and if you have Gio back to normal, if you have Strasburg on his way back, and then you have Jordan Zimmermann, who obviously I think will be Cy Young man. But
another incredible start tonight for him. 8 innings.
Just such a – like a – it's almost like – I don't – it's like he swapped bodies with Gio from last year. Like, it's so weird that he's just that guy.
You know what's amazing? It's like we always looked at this pitching staff and you went, you had three guys that are really good. Three guys that Strasburg's better than most number ones, although this year he hasn't been because he hasn't been totally healthy.
Right, right.
Gio's better than most number twos, which 2 months ago you would say he isn't, but now you would say absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And Zimmerman's better than most number threes, so that's nice. But the other nice thing about it is any one of those guys can have a month or two stretch where they're just the best pitcher in baseball because they're that good.
Right.
Even their number three pitcher, which is ostensibly what Zimmerman is, can be the best pitcher in baseball. So Zimmerman's got 10 wins now, which, although I just said that pitchers' wins aren't important, they're important to people making all-star teams and winning Cy Young awards.
Right, exactly.
Because people look at that. But, I mean, tonight for us, we're recording Thursday night. He just finished 8 innings, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk.
Wow.
And only 6 hits. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't a no-hitter by any means, but 6 hits and 1 walk, he let less than a base runner on an inning.
Right.
And just attacked the zone. Just hit it.
And I really think that if the offense does come around, I think you're going to see a change in Dan Heron because I don't think he's a terrible pitcher. I mean,
well, I hope you're right because I'm going to see Dan Heron pitch on Saturday, and it's going to be 90 degrees and my not-quite-2-year-old is there with me. So it could be a mess before the game even starts.
Wow.
So I'm really hoping Heron doesn't make it a mess himself.
Right. Well, he's not walking a lot of guys. He's getting strikeouts. I think he just doesn't have the run support. So I'm hoping.
Yeah. You know, there was a bit of a sort of backlash against Heron the other night. And I get it because everybody was frustrated, but Dan Heron the other night, like the last two games,
that Met game, are you talking about that? That was a disaster when it was 1-10.
No, since that Met game where he was awful, you know, he went to Colorado and was basically perfect for 4 innings,
yeah,
and then he blew up, and you know, I don't know why that happened, but he really was great for 4 innings, and you wonder. Yeah. If Davey had recognized earlier how bad he would get, if he had taken him out, we'd all be talking about like, well, that was a really great start, even though he only went 4 1/3.
Mm-hmm.
But instead he went 5. And then against Philly, he gave up 4 runs in 6 innings. It wasn't a good start by any means. It's not something you expected when you got Heron.
Right.
But that was enough of a start that the Nats could have won that game.
Yeah.
Just they didn't hit at all.
Right.
They ended up losing 4-5.
Yeah. So he's the one guy that, I mean, we'll get into this next podcast, because next podcast I want to talk about possible trades and also all-star voting, but because I think we have one show before that all happens. But, yeah,
I'm voting for Puig.
Oh, of course. Who isn't?
He is amazing. Have you watched him much?
Yes, because our friend S.A. is obsessed with him, and so he'll tell me when he's up, so I'll turn it on my iPad to watch him, and it's just – that 1 week he had was just ridiculous, but I don't know. Is he going to slow down?
I mean, eventually you would think so, but he's looking pretty awesome.
Yeah, I liked your tweet about how you just replace Puig's name with Harper's name with Puig, and it was like the same thing.
Yeah, they were just talking about like he's a young player, he plays so hard, and then they started talking about like Mattingly's got to keep him calm because you never know. You know, he's going to end up hurting himself. And I was just like, this is exactly what everybody says about Harper. Speaking of Puig and our buddy, we got to plug what S.A. did. So S.A. is our buddy that we refer to who does a lot of graphic design stuff.
Yep.
And I got to claim credit for this idea, but I gave it to S.A.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one.
Because all I could think about was that picture that everybody knows of Che Guevara.
Yep.
Like the beret looking up, and I told him to put Puig's face on it and put it on a T-shirt. So he did that, and he's actually selling the T-shirt. So I don't have a quick link to the website, but we can put a link up.
If you go to society6.com and search SA51.
ESE51, yeah.
Yeah, you can
We'll put a link up on the podcast.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's a fun shirt, and if you're into Puig, you can definitely get it. It's Puig's face on the classic Che.
Yes.
Because they're both, you know, I guess Che wasn't actually Cuban, but he's famous for fighting in the Cuban Revolution. So
Well, everyone.
If we put it on Fidel's face, I don't know if it would have been.
that probably wouldn't have sold as well. But I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to tell Charlie that it's on my to-do list this week to get or actually for next week, is to get the National Review fixed in iTunes. So we can get that taken care of. But everyone, you go to thenationalsreview.com for all the articles and to listen to the podcast. We have a player now, so you can play it right there on the site. But hopefully we'll get it on iTunes, and of course we'll tweet it out so you can follow that. You follow me on Twitter at Culmination.
You follow me at Nationals Review.
And I think that's pretty – is that it? Is that everything?
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah, that's everything. So we'll be back in a couple weeks. We'll probably talk All-Star and trade deadline stuff coming up soon.
And anything else you guys want, shoot us a note.
Yep. All right, everyone. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you at the ballpark.
See you at the park.